The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, you've heard me say it before, and you're going to hear me say it again. You'll probably not finish hearing me say this until the Lord brings me home. But on the issue of life, you show me your pro-life faith by what you say. I'll show you my pro-life faith by what I do. And so that's the question for all of us as we did a couple shows on the issue of abortion last week, as we had the National March for Life, we had the North Carolina March for Life, we had Sanctity of Life Sunday. And this is a topic, if you're like, Steve, you talk about abortion too much, well, you know what? Find another show, because I'm always going to work it in whenever I can in the midst of the Holocaust that we're in, not only here in America, but worldwide. So always going to take an opportunity to talk to our friends that are working on the front lines. And there's a lot of different facets. Dealing with the pro-life situation is kind of like looking at a diamond. There's a lot of different sides, a lot of different facets. And so you have to really work hard to cover all of those. Susan B. Anthony list has been around for a while, covering that in a very specific way. And one of the great things about the Susan B. Anthony list is they really rely on people like me and you to be a part of it, what they're doing legislatively, but also getting out and being involved in the voting process. So today we're going to talk about that, whether you live here in Raleigh, over in Chapel Hill, down in Charlotte, some other part of North Carolina, or if you're in South Carolina or even Virginia. There's an opportunity for you to engage here. And as we have midterm elections coming up, as well as a third of the U.S. Senate, there's a lot going on in a lot of different ways that you can be somebody that shows your pro-life faith by what you do. Okay, so that's what we're doing for the first half of the show today. Michelle Ashley is with us. She's the state director for North Carolina and Pennsylvania. And then my friend Catherine Burgess, who's on the North Carolina field director, who also worked with Love Life. Ladies, how are you? Happy New Year.
Hello. Hi,
thank you, Steve.
So now we get to do Zoom, because like Zoom is like Starbucks. You don't ask, you don't say coffee anymore. You say Starbucks. And if you're going to have a conversation, you just assume we're going to do it on Zoom. So I appreciate you ladies being willing to do this today. And Catherine, thanks for reaching out for me. It's great to see you, and I appreciate all your efforts as well.
Thank you.
So Michelle, so for people that don't know much about Susan B. Anthony list, just kind of give us the 30,000 foot view of what you guys do and your history, and then we'll talk a little bit more as we get into the show about what we can do at a local level.
Okay, great. Thanks, Steve, for having us on. We appreciate it. Susan B. Anthony list. Yeah. So we exist basically to pass pro-life legislation to protect the unborn, and then also to elect leaders on the federal level and statewide, who will vote for laws that save the lives of unborn children. So we're very singularly focused on the life issue. And we have been, Catherine and I are part of the field program. So that's our grassroots operation nationwide to elect pro-life leaders to office. And it's really about voter education. So we speak to voters at their doors. It's a very targeted approach. And the voter education that's happening is really second to none, because we see that many people are either misinformed about the life issue and many that are uninformed. So the work we do is very effective in that sense.
And then what was the genesis of Susan B. Anthony? Some people might be familiar with who Susan B. Anthony actually is, I would assume. Yeah. I'm unfortunately going to assume that most people don't, because we don't know our history very well.
Right, exactly. So we get that question a lot. In fact, when we wear our T-shirts out, it's a conversation starter, because it's Susan B. Anthony list, and they'll assume, and it's a blue T-shirt, they'll assume that we are pro-choice. And so it's a great conversation starter. But basically, Susan B. Anthony and her contemporaries that, you know, were part of the suffrage movement to gain the vote for women, they were pro-life. The early feminists were pro-life. That is something that many Americans don't know, that the feminist movement, it was in many ways hijacked by pro-abortionists. So the early feminists were pro-life. Susan B. Anthony actually had a newspaper with another feminist, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and they refused any kind of advertisements from companies that made abortifacient drugs, and they spoke out against abortion.
Yeah, it's such a rich history going all the way back, and I teach U.S. history with high school age homeschoolers, and most of them don't even realize the fact that I said, listen, for the ladies in the class, I'll say, do you guys realize that we freed the slaves and gave them the right to vote before we did that for you? You didn't even have the right to vote when the slaves had a right to vote. And so you have to understand people like Susan B. Anthony, who are willing to do something about it, which is really the point of us talking today, is kind of moving from, yes, I'm concerned about that. For me as a Christian, abortion should be a no-brainer. But the question becomes, what do you do about it? And so kind of what's the philosophy just on a local level for people that are just listening and finding out about it? And then I want to make sure, Catherine, we give you some time to run to tell us what's going on in North Carolina. But what's the general philosophy, Michelle, in terms of affecting change on a local level, like state and local level?
Right. So we are, for 2022, we are active right now in six states. We were in North Carolina in 2020, and we're very active in the election for president and for U.S. Senate. As we know, Donald Trump won North Carolina, as did Senator Tillis won re-election. And so our focus in 2022, six states we're active in right now, North Carolina being really key to that. As we've seen the demographic and everything shift in North Carolina, and President Trump and Senator Tillis only won the state by less than about 2 percentage points. So North Carolina is really key for 2022 midterms. And our goal is to win the U.S. House of Representatives and to gain a majority again in the U.S. Senate. Because as we've seen, the Biden administration is trying to roll back and undo all the pro-life gains from the Trump administration.
Yeah, and from that perspective, I guess we can say it's not hyperbole to say that the Biden administration is the most pro-choice administration that we've ever had.
Yeah, yes, definitely. That's not hyperbole.
Yeah, and that's elections have consequences, and that's why. And one of the challenges that we face, you both know this, is there's talking about national politics and what's going on in D.C. Gets most of the attention. But what happens at a state level, even with members of your own representation here in the state, whether that's the state senate or the state house, this is really something that bridges the whole gap between federal and state. And that's why local involvement is so important. And I think a lot of people miss that.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think a lot of people. Yeah. And that's one of the things we communicate at the doors that, for instance, one thing that really has helped with elections in the past is that people, the function of the U.S. Senate. So it's not just legislation, but it's confirming the Supreme Court justices and federal judges. And we saw under President Trump, three Supreme Court justices that were nominated and confirmed, and then over 200 federal judges. And they have such an, I mean, as we've seen that in the courts, such an impact on the life issue.
Oh, yeah.
And we've seen it locally in North Carolina, too, with Governor Cooper vetoing, you know, every piece of pro-life legislation.
Yeah, that's for sure. And while as a constitutional teacher as well, I teach civics as well, I'm not real thrilled about the judicial system having as much power as it does on the issue of life. It is the way it is, and that's where we live. And so we engage in the situation that we find ourselves. Talking to Michelle and Catherine from the Susan B. Anthony List, what you can do next. We'll be right back. Get off your rear end. How about that? Is that crazy? I don't think it's crazy. I think it's the right thing to do. Listen, my story goes back all the way back to 2004, really, in terms of political involvement, 2002 in terms of Christian involvement. And I was living a decent life, going to church, going to my Bible study, all that kind of stuff. And that's all good in and of itself. But is that enough, especially when you live in the culture that we live in, especially when you consider the issue of life going from a profession of pro-life faith to actually doing something about it? I will continue to beat that drum. It's been a huge blessing, by the way, not just something I feel compelled to do, but something that's been a blessing to me and my family to be involved because obedience always comes with a blessing. And you know that this issue is important to the Lord. Therefore, it should be important to us. And we can look around the country and we see what it's done to this nation, the coarsening of the nation just over the issue of life. In and of itself, that's why we are always willing to take some time and talk to our friends in the movement. Today, Michelle Ashley and Catherine Burgess, who are here from SBA, the Susan B. Anthony List, and talking about what we can do on a state and local level, the national presence of SBA, but specifically how we can all get involved with a big election year coming up. Six states that Michelle mentioned, North Carolina, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Florida, and Arizona. Here in North Carolina, Catherine and I have known each other through Love Life. Catherine, kind of what's the plan here? What's your involvement? How did you get into the SBA list, and why is this such a big issue for you personally? And then we'll talk about nuts and bolts, what we can do.
Well, this is a very big personal issue for me and my family. And I've told people my testimony before. Doctors actually told my mother, who was already, unfortunately, a post-abortive mom. I lost two siblings to this horrific act. And doctors told my mother to actually abort me because they told her that I was most likely going to be born with debilitating disabilities. And my mother walked out of the office and obviously said no. So obviously praise very God. Grateful to her. Yes. Every single day, that woman can do no wrong in my eyes after that. So it's very, very personal for me. But what I always tell people is, like, just sitting at home and hoping that it gets better is not enough, because I remember when I saw New York light up pink in celebration of late term abortion, and I called my mom and I was upset, and she said a phrase that changed my entire life in course of what I wanted to do with it. And she said, "Well, you're upset. What are you going to do about it?"
There you go.
And the next thing you know, love life happened. And now I am wonderfully employed with SBA. So it really pushed forward with the movement. But it's so important to be involved locally. You know, North Carolina is such an important state whenever it comes to any election. And with the Senate race coming up, too many NC voters do not know how radical the left is when it comes to abortion. People, whenever I go and I train these canvassers and we're knocking on doors, people are shell-shocked whenever you talk to them about late-term abortion. Yeah. And unfortunately, so many people don't even know that in North Carolina, abortion is happening all the way up to 20 weeks.
Yeah.
And we're reaching the point, you know, scientifically, where a child can survive out of the womb at that point.
Right, exactly.
So many voters in North Carolina don't know the truth. And I feel like it's so pivotal that our canvassers are out there helping, knocking on doors, giving them the proper information to make a true informed decision on who they are voting for.
So what's the SBA approach when you're coming up to a house, and who are you talking to? Are you talking to known Republican voters? Who are you talking to? And what's the approach when you're there? And then generally, and both of you can answer this, what kind of reactions are you running into? I guess it depends on whose house you're knocking on the door.
Right. We have a really targeted approach. So we're going to pro-life and persuadable pro-life voters. And so those can be voters, too, that they're pro-life, but maybe they're not voting in midterm elections. You know, they're voting, they're only voting maybe in the presidential years or something. So our goal is really to educate those voters and to get them to the polls on election day. And so we have a short script. It's only about four questions. But what we're showing them is we're drawing the contrast between the pro-life person running, the candidate, and then the pro-abortion person. And we're so grateful for shows like yours, Steve, because you're there shining the light on it. But, you know, we see the media, much of the media gives the pro-abortion Democrats cover.
Sure.
Voters do not know that many Democrats, they're radical on abortion. They want abortion up to birth for any reason, all funded by taxpayers. And so it's so effective because we're going to the doors, and many times we're talking to Christians. If they're voting for Democrats, they think they're voting for the party of compassion. So when they learn how radical the party is on abortion, it really, really starts changing their minds, and we see their faces change. And so many of them thank us for the work they're doing. Even people, if they don't agree with us, most of them are friendly and at least cordial.
Yeah. And that's good to hear. And that's the thing. Most people sit there and go, they want abortion right after the point of delivery, like in New York and like the town up pink. And they go, well, that's just New York or that's just California. But that's just not true. That's kind of the norm for the Democrat Party. All of it. I mean, if they could get that in North Carolina, they'd get it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. That's the aim.
Mm-hmm. And so tell us, Catherine, about what we can do to help specifically here in North Carolina.
Well, specifically what you can do to help in North Carolina is actually to join us as one of our door-to-door canvassers. It is a wonderful job. It is a extraordinary flexible job. You literally create your own hours and schedule. This is a job that you can do 7 days a week. If you want to only dedicate 5 hours, go ahead, only dedicate 5 hours. But you could also make this a full-time job, and the pay starts at $15 an hour.
Wow.
So this is a fantastic job for students, even someone who just wants to make a little bit of extra money on the side. But the majority of the people that we see isn't just a job to them. And we're not going to hire you if this is just a job.
Right, exactly.
This is a movement. This is something that we want you to be passionate about, because that passion is going to show at the door to that voter. So if you want to get involved and you want the, you know, North Carolina voters to have that proper information that majority of the pro-life community usually knows. I always tell my canvassers, you know what? It's sad, but the majority of the time, you know way more than the person whose door you're knocking on. So if you want that to change, that is how you can do it, is becoming one of these canvassers and getting that information out.
And how do people get prepared to do that? I know that, and the website sba-list.org, but where do they go there? And then how do they get prepared? I know there's some training.
Yeah, so there is some training. So our field directors, we work very, very closely with our canvassers. We will personally train them. This isn't something that we do over Zoom, because this is something we want to make sure that they are comfortable in what they are doing and that they're doing it safely as well. We do everything, you know, by the book at SBA to make sure that everyone is safe and confident in the job that they have. So, you know, me, I would go out with the canvasser. I would train them, go through a handbook. I would go door to door with them for that entire first day, or even the second, you know, day, if they still feel a little bit shaky about what they're doing. So we will walk with you through this process until you are confident to walk up to some stranger's door and have a big smile on your face and say, "Hi, I am Catherine from SBA, and I want to give you a 4-question survey, and we are a pro-life organization." So it's a very family-based organization, yeah. And we're going to work through you to train you.
And what percentage, and I'm sure this is nationwide, maybe it differs a little bit by market, but what percentage of people would you say, Michelle and Catherine, are generally decent when you go to the door?
I've been doing this for 6 years, and I could really count on one hand the number of people that I would say were outright rude, right?
Yeah.
So it's like 99% of people, even if they don't agree with us, the most usually they'll do is they'll say no, thank you.
Right.
But what's nice is we're doing a simple survey, and it's a soft approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not there to argue. If someone's rude, you know, thank you, have a nice day.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It also turns into a ministry, because we meet so many people that have been impacted by the abortion
yeah.
industry. And
oh,
that's
yeah. all over the place. What's the website, Catherine? Where do people go to get involved?
It'll be sba-list.org, and then you can get all the information on where you can go from there, and you will get connected with a local field director to get you started as a canvasser.
Which drop-down list is it? Is it the Get Involved one? Which one?
But I would think the best way to reach is through our email, if we can
okay.
provide that.
Yeah, I'll do that in a sec. Hold on just a sec. We'll be right back. That's loud. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you, and appreciated being with Michelle and Catherine from SBA, Susan B. Anthony List. And I wanted to get this information to you. So if you want to get involved, and again, remember, this is a paid gig, all right? It's not a volunteer thing. So you go out canvassing where they train you, and you're just going door to door talking to people. "Hi, I'm Steve. I'm with the Susan B. Anthony List. We're a pro-life organization. Just wanted to see if you could take a survey right quick." And here's where you have to be careful. The mainstream media, the right media, the left media, social media, all of it is very effective at painting a picture that we all absolutely hate each other, right? Everywhere you go, everybody's just about ready to grab a 2x4 and beat each other to death. That's the way it gets portrayed, okay? But you have to remember, most of us don't live like that. We don't encounter that. Maybe you have a little mask thing here and there, and so you've encountered some of that. But largely, I mean largely, 80%, 85%, 90% of the time, people are just kind of decent. Most people don't want to engage. They don't want to get in an argument. They'll go bonkers on Facebook or social media, or they'll tweet like their hair's on fire. But in person, most people just aren't like that. Most people can't handle that kind of direct confrontation. They're uncomfortable with it. So the vast majority of people are friendly. And anymore, especially because we don't know anybody neighborhood-wise. So when people walk up to the house, you're like, "Oh, who's this?" And if it's a nice, smiling person, then, like they said, 95% of the time, it's very friendly. Isn't that amazing? That's because you're programmed by social media and everything to assume that it's going to be like 50% of the time these people are going to scream at me and hate me, and it's going to be terrible. But that's just not the case. Most of the time, people are decent, especially if you lead with a smile and you're kind and you're nice. You'll be shocked at how most people will engage, and you can actually have a good conversation. Plus, when you work with SBA, you're getting paid $15 an hour, 5 hours a week, 15 hours a week, 30 hours a week. That's a great job to be out, and you're promoting life, you're honoring God, and you're making money. I mean, that's a pretty good deal. So if you're in North Carolina, Catherine Burgess, who used to be with Love Life, she said just email her directly. Okay, that's Catherine with a K, Catherine at sbalistfield.org. Okay, I'll put it on Facebook Live so you have that as well. Catherine at SBA List Field, FIELD.org. Catherine at SBA List Field. .org, or you can just go to the SBA website, which is sba-list.org, and you'll see an email sign up right there. You sign up for their email, so you get that information, but they're going to send you and ask you to be a canvasser and get involved to help move the needle in these states, especially with the U.S. Senate races, things of that nature. So this is really important. SBA does a great job, so make sure you check that out and get involved. And a great way to make money. Think about that. You're promoting life. You're honoring God. You're helping affect the country. And you get paid $15 an hour. That's a pretty sweet deal. Catherine with a K at SBAListField.org. So you can kind of move from the sidelines to the front lines and be involved. Okay. So we're banned for a week right now on YouTube. And why is that? Did that happen today, Josh? Yesterday? That happened as a result of yesterday because... If you were a part of the show yesterday, you know what I did. And I provided medical information. I provided facts. I provided my commentary, which isn't illegal nor inaccurate. But anytime you go against the mainstream narrative, that's what's going to happen on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, yada, yada, yada. And by the way, earlier today, I'm banned on Twitter all of a sudden, and I don't hardly ever use it. I gather information at Twitter, but I maybe... tweet once a month. It's not my platform. I use Facebook. So that was kind of bizarre, but that's just the world we live in. So you have to engage and you engage with the truth and let the chips fall where they may. So earlier today, I got a text from my buddy Steve Dace over at The Blaze. And they did a 20-minute segment on his show earlier today. And by the way, that's at The Blaze Network, okay? At Glenn Beck's Network. Or you can get him on Rumble. You can follow Steve on Rumble or Twitter or Facebook, Steve Dace, D-E-A-C-E. And the question was, they did this 20-minute thing. The verdict on Fauciism is in. So I don't have to worry about Facebook right now. Not that I would anyway. But they looked at something called excess death. Okay, so there's a number out there. If you go look it up, they can project, because we know on average about how many people die in America every year. And then they can look at that based on age. They can look at that based on cause. So there's excess death numbers. So what you want to see, right, is zero. Or a negative. We actually see people living longer. Excess deaths are in the negative. So actually, we had fewer people die this year than last year. That's kind of what you're looking for. But in the last 2 years, excess death numbers as a percentage growth across the nation on average is up about 10, 11, 12, 13%. Excess deaths. Now you go, okay, hold on a second. Stop the presses. What about COVID? Okay, that's a great point. What about COVID? So we should see excess deaths based on COVID because COVID came onto the scene 2 years ago. But also you would notice if you paid any attention to these numbers that deaths as a real result of flu and some other associated things basically disappear, right? So you have a little flip-flop there. Plus the COVID numbers in terms of deaths we know are off, right? We know they're off because just like they code at hospitals, if you come in for a heart valve replacement, that's why you're there, and then they test you, and then you have COVID. There's most, if not all, hospitals in the country will switch your filing to say you're a COVID hospitalization, even though that's not why you're there. So you're there with COVID, not because of COVID. And the same thing happens with the death numbers. Okay, so you have death with COVID or death of or from COVID. So even the death numbers are kind of off. Anyway, the point being, when you dive into this and going through the verdict on Fauciism is in. So here's what he did. He took had all the numbers by state. So overall, the excess death numbers per state, all 50 states, goes through all of that. Then he picks the 12 worst where they had the highest increase in excess deaths. And then he picked the 12 best where they had the lowest increase. Okay, so you got two columns there. Imagine this, two columns of states. 12 over here where they had the worst excess death numbers and 12 over here where they had the least excess death numbers. So things are better in these states over here, the least, than the states over here. 12 states at the tops, 12 states at the bottom. Then they overlaid restrictions, lockdowns. So we're going to restrict schools, shut down businesses, unless like you're an abortion clinic or a strip joint or or a liquor store. We're not going to shut those down, but we'll shut everything else down. So the most restrictive shutdown, the most restrictive in schools and masking and vaccine mandates, all that kind of stuff. So overlay that and try to guess what the result is. So the 12 states with the worst excess death numbers were the ones that had the most restrictive, the most draconian response to COVID. Isn't that interesting? The other 12 states that did best when it came to excess death numbers in 2021 and 2020, those 12 states were among the most open, the least restrictive, the most free, if you will. Okay? So you got that. This little overlay map in your head is getting more interesting. Let's go back to the states with the highest excess deaths and the most restrictive. All 12 of those states, all 12 of them, guess who they voted for in the presidential election last time around. I'll wait. Go ahead. Just guess. Just work on that. Think about that for a second. So the most closed, the most restrictive, the most draconian. Who did they vote for? Well, here's the list, okay? These are the most closed. Vermont, Delaware, Washington, Virginia, New York, California, Connecticut, Maine, Rhode Island, New Jersey, Minnesota, Michigan. What? That's 12 of them. What do they all have in common from a presidential election standpoint? That's you don't need to take time to pray about your answer. It's fine. That's right. Every single one of them, all 12 of them voted for Biden. They were some of the most closed states in the country. They all voted for Biden, and they all had the highest excess death numbers. Here it is again. Vermont, Delaware, Washington, Virginia, New York, California, Connecticut, Maine, Rhode Island, New Jersey, Minnesota, and Michigan. Let's go to the other list. These are amongst the most open states in the country. Iowa, Florida, Wyoming, South Dakota, Texas, Alaska, South Carolina, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Montana, Idaho, Missouri. Every one of those states voted for Donald Trump. They were open, very open states in terms of restrictions and mask mandates, all that good stuff. And they had the lowest out of all 50 states. These are the 12 lowest with the excess death numbers. So you could say they did the best with in terms of overall health. And so, but they all voted red. They all voted for Trump. Now you can try to say, that's just politics, blah, blah. No, these are just numbers. That's all this is. It's just numbers. It's data. And then that tests your ability to be intellectually honest. The data and the numbers, the facts say A, and you should say, okay, then A it is. But your politics oftentimes don't allow you. You're going to say B and just blow it off. A lot more on that. Okay, we'll talk about that and why that happened. There's a lot more to talk about. Bring that up a little. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, following up on something my friend Steve Dates did earlier today on The Blaze. He's on from 12 to 2, by the way. And he was looking at situations around the country, excess death. Okay, we know basically how many deaths we have per year in this country. And you can see a line, you can see the trend, so you can project that. Then there's a measurement of excess deaths. So if all of a sudden we had all, if it goes up 5 or 10 or 15%, you're like, whoa, what happened? Okay, why do we have 15% more people dying this year than we did last year? That would be an issue, right? So, of course, now in the last 2 years, you go, well, COVID. But the number of COVID deaths isn't high enough to explain when you have a 10, 12, 13, 14, 15% increase in excess death numbers. Okay, that's astronomical and should get your attention. You should have to go in, hold on a second. Why do we have so many excess deaths? Like, what's going on there? As a percentage increase, okay? So, like, here's the list. And this is scary stuff, okay? These are excess deaths versus the previous year. So, on the low end, Rhode Island actually was down 6.9%. So, they had fewer deaths than projected. This was last year. North Carolina, we did all right, down 1%. So, we actually had fewer. Then it starts climbing up. West Virginia, 2.7, Massachusetts, 3.4. So that's 3.4% more deaths than the previous year. All right, so a little fluctuation, 2, 3, 4%. If you get 5, 6, 7, 10%, you're like, right? You would go, what's happening here? This is bizarre. And it goes on. Pennsylvania, 10.3. I'm just sampling at this point. Illinois, 11.2. Delaware, 13.9. Maine, 14% excess deaths year over year. Indiana, 15.4. Connecticut, 16.3. Montana, 19. Oklahoma, 19.1. Florida, 19.8. Tennessee, 20. Georgia, 20.5. New Mexico, 27. Alaska, 27. All right, so these are excess deaths. You go, okay, that's pretty scary, isn't it? It should be. And you go, okay, then you start looking at them and right, what's happening here. So Rhode Island, like 17.6%. South Carolina, 7.5%. Indiana, pretty low, 0.2%. So then you start looking at why are we having these excess deaths? So go, COVID, you're at, well, yeah, there's COVID in there. Because we're at what as a nation? 850,000 COVID deaths? And this is going to sound terrible, but I'm going to put that in air quotes. COVID deaths. Okay? COVID deaths. Because you code them as a COVID death. If they died from something else, but they had COVID, that's a COVID death. Just like states are starting to come out saying, oh, yeah, we actually don't have that many people in the hospital from COVID. They're in the hospital for another reason, and then we find out that they have COVID, so we code them as COVID. But they're not there because of COVID, which is a important distinction, don't you think? And so all those numbers are inflated. So then Steve Dace and his team were looking at all this and going, okay, well, let's take the 12 worst states in terms of excess deaths and the 12 best states. And lo and behold, they find that the 12 best states, meaning the least amount of increase of excess deaths, were the most open. And interestingly enough, all 12 of them went for Trump in the last election. The worst states with the highest increase, the worst 12, all were the most restrictive in the country, and they all voted for Biden. And COVID doesn't account for all the excess deaths. So what's going on there? Why do we have an increase in excessive deaths, even factoring in for COVID? Well, anxiety, depression, suicide, alcoholism, misdiagnoses, especially in the cancer thing, because those dominoes are still falling from 2020 when the hospitals weren't letting people come in for routine appointments, routine checkups, cancer screenings. No, we canceled all that stuff for a while. So you have, and we're finding these numbers more and more now, real tangible fallout. I've been referring to them as the other dominoes that have been lining up behind COVID for the last 2 years. And so your perspective and how you pursued this, if it was fear-based and control-based, your people suffered more. The facts are in. That's why Steve Dace on the Blaze was saying the verdict on Fauciism is in. And the verdict's not good. So here's what he said at the end of the show. I'm just reading from the screen. When you consider the average age of a COVID death in America is almost the exact average life expectancy in America, and then how many deaths could have been avoided without shunning or denying effective early treatments, then it really becomes obvious Fauciism is either the greatest failure in the history of medicine or the greatest success in the history of authoritarianism. Which was my point yesterday, that between the spirit of age, the age, the works of Satan, the general lostness of the culture, not just here but around the world, human depravity taking advantage of every opportunity it has to expand power and control, and you add all that stuff together, it's just a perfect storm, and COVID just provides. And then greed, like for Pfizer and Moderna, and people in the halls of our government up in D.C. that are making money on this stuff, not to mention the power and control. And the whole thing's just a big casserole of bad news. And most people are operating kind of out of a fear-based mentality and worldview. They don't want to get sick. They don't want to die. They don't want to get other people sick and so that they might die. And I appreciate all that. But sooner or later, you can't run your life based on emotions. You got to run your life based on facts. And so here we go. These numbers are going to continue to come out. The truth will continue to come out. And we need to be praying. If you're a person of the book, if you're a follower of Christ, we all need to be praying for wisdom and discernment and truth and justice in this mess. Because people are going to continue to suffer. The prices will continue to be paid, especially for our young people. We don't even know what this is going to look like in a few years as we've masked and shut down and done all the things we've done with our young people. And now we've got parents across the nation willing to vax their 5-year-old, their 4-year-old, their toddler, their infant. That's sick. All for what? Your fear and a virtue signal. Hey, I got my child vaxxed. Oh, aren't you a good parent? Don't you care about society? You see how that works, right? That's like a giant virtue signal. And again, I don't know what percentage of people actually think at the front of their minds like this, because a lot of people just don't understand why they do what they do. But that's what's happening. Okay, so we're going to keep talking about it. I'm going to keep looking for the facts and for the numbers and continue to shed light on the truth. And if YouTube wants to ban me, they can ban me, whatever. Okay, I want to finish with this because it's been just an incredible season at the Supreme Court. And here's another one. This is a huge case. Race, Harvard, and the Supreme Court. Oh, this just came out. This story came out yesterday. The Supreme Court agreed on January 24th to hear suits alleging that race-conscious admission policies at Harvard and University of North Carolina, right here down the street, are discriminatory against Asian American students. The Supreme Court on Monday agreed to hear two cases challenging racial preferences at those two places, Harvard and the University of North Carolina. Kudos, this is the executive board at the editorial board at the Wall Street Journal. Kudos to the justices for taking this opportunity to vindicate equal treatment under the law, regardless of race, especially when the left is pushing racial calculations into policies far beyond campus. This also is a chance for the court to correct its own mistakes. Racial quotas are forbidden, but in Grutter versus Bollinger in 2003, a 5-4 majority endorsed the idea that race could be a quote-unquote plus factor to help colleges seek, quote, the educational benefits that flow from a diverse student body. Yet, there is an expiration date. Quote, we expect that 25 years from now, the use of racial preferences will no longer be necessary to further the interest approved today. That deadline is almost here. But two decades later, the progressive zeal for divvying up people by race, ethnicity, and sexuality has increased. Colleges have begun hosting specific graduation events for Black, Latinx, or LGBT students. Some dorms provide optional affinity housing. States and hospitals lately have written race into their policies for allocating scarce COVID-19 treatments. The old goal of equality is now passé on the left, which wants equity, which means unequal treatment in an attempt to achieve equal results. That makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Also, what is the limit on a racial plus factor? Again, this is from the Wall Street Journal yesterday. Students for Fair Admissions, the petitioner in both cases, says Harvard admits, get this, 56.1% of black applicants in the top academic decile, compared with 31.3% of Hispanics, 15.3% of whites, and 12.7% of Asians, all things being the same, right? So they all score the same in the SAT, yada, yada. And they're admitting 56.1% of black applicants are getting in versus 31.3% of Hispanic, 15.3% of white, and 12.7% of Asians. A black applicant who's in the fourth lowest section, it adds, has a higher chance of admission than an Asian American in the top section, academically speaking. So a black student in the fourth lowest in terms of qualifying, actually just qualifying the numbers, gets admitted more than an Asian student in the top percentage of performance. Is that a problem? Yes, it is. Okay, back to the article. This would be one heck of a plus factor, which suggests that in reality, Harvard is pretty much doing what it wants. Quote, Gutter was wrong the day it was decided, the petition says. The Fourth Amendment guarantees all Americans, black, white, and Asian, the equal protection of the laws. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 bans racial discrimination under any program or activity receiving federal financial assistance, which all these schools do. The justices have abortion and guns on this year's docket, so give them credit for taking on another combustible subject. As for the merits, it's hard to improve on Chief Justice Roberts' formulation in a 2007 case where he said the following. The way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop the discrimination on the basis of race. Time for an encore, Mr. Chief Justice. There you go. That gives me a little hope because Chief Justice John Roberts said that. The way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discrimination on the basis of race. So kudos to the Supreme Court that they're taking that. Because could you imagine? This would be a direct reversal of affirmative action at the collegiate level. And then that's where I would say, okay, we want a merit-based system, to which a good chunk of the woke culture would say, I'm a racist for even bringing that up. Listen, whatever happened to the ancient notion of you get what you deserve? If the school gives equal opportunity to everybody based on their performance, then it's fair. And I don't care what color your skin is or how religious you are or how much money you have. That's just fair, the way we used to actually do it here in this country. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
another program powered by the Truth Network.